It takes a village to raise a child, it's been said, and it takes all kinds of people to make a village. But that's still a message that bears repeating over and over again. The Earth is a diverse place with people of all colors and shapes and sizes and orientations, and some don't especially like the others, categorically. Our guests this hour work to help the various parts of the human race work in harmony with each other. Rabbi Deborah Kolodny joins us from Portland. She is a teacher of workshops on interrupting hate, among many other things she does, and she'll be bringing those workshops to the Rogue Valley next week. Rabbi Deborah, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
And we also have with us in the studio Marjorie Trueblood Gamble, who is the Director of Diversity and Inclusion at Southern Oregon University. Marjorie, always good to see you in the studio.
Thank you.
So give us the basics, each of you, and let's start with you, Marjorie. How you ended up in this line of work? What motivated you to do what you're doing now?
I was very involved in campus activities when I was a student in college and wanted to find ways to pay it forward and loved interacting and meeting people from different backgrounds and hearing their stories to really have a rich campus life and wanted to figure out what we could do, but then not only focus on the celebrations, but thinking about how we could improve our campus communities. And that jettisoned me to where I'm at today. And a lot about food, fun, and festivals, but a lot about social justice and trying to make sure that people can feel like the human beings that they are and to regain their sense of human dignity.
So with the food, fun, and festivals, you do get to do some planning for events that make people happy with each other while you're also having to investigate things where they have not been happy with each other?
Most definitely. For example, this weekend we just had the 21st Luau here on SOU's campus, which was a blast.
Okay, that kind of stuff. That sounds great. Rabbi Deborah Kolodny, give us a bit about your background and how you ended up doing what you're doing now.
Thanks. Yeah. Well, I was raised in New York City, which is a very different place demographically than Oregon. And I was raised by parents who had a pretty awakened consciousness around celebrating difference and honoring and justice and ensuring that everyone could be fully actualized, I guess is what I would say. And even though my parents were secular, I think I was really raised with very strong Jewish values around honoring difference and welcoming people who are the strangers, the scripture would say. And I, at the very tender age of 12, I decided I wanted to become a civil rights lawyer, and I went to law school. But I graduated at a time when there weren't a whole lot of social justice lawyering jobs available. And so I turned my passion for justice professionally towards doing work in the labor movement, and in my free time, which wasn't that much, but I committed myself to being a social justice activist, you know, at the community level. I came out as bisexual when I was around 20, and so I did a lot of LGBTQ activism, and I did a lot of racial justice activism through that world, very intentionally intersectional work. That was decades ago, and throughout my entire career, whether I was working in the labor movement and creating workplace democracies and addressing power differentials and through that structure and lifting up and empowering workers, or whether I was doing the LGBT work, or whether I was running nonprofits. This is the third nonprofit I've run. I've been focused on social justice work. So I guess I would say I was born into it.
Give us a sense of the state of diversity at the moment, each of you. And Rabbi Deborah, let's start with you. I mean, obviously gains in recent years, particularly on the LGBTQ front, but I wonder how you would characterize this moment.
This moment has been overwhelming for so many of us who are social justice warriors. But it also has awakened a lot of people who thought things were okay, you know, thought that, well, look, we'd elected a black president, we're okay. But the backlash against the Obama presidency and the rampant and horrific sexism against Hillary Clinton as a candidate and the hatefulness that President Trump ran on in his campaign that he encouraged and expressed and incited has just continued since his election. So we're in a very, very tender moment where all of us who have been honing our skills for decades really have to give both social justice, but also give love and compassion and welcome and inclusion everything we've got. you know, the language has changed over the years. Diversity was the language that was used a while ago, and it kind of, today we see diversity as work that maybe was a little too superficial, and we're focusing now on equity, which is which lifts up the reality that we have lived in a white supremacist world for hundreds of years, and we need to dismantle structures and systems of oppression in order to lift everyone up to their potential and end both implicit and explicit bias. So at this moment, we're doing both the structural work at Resolutions Northwest, where I'm the executive director here in Portland, and we're also doing the interpersonal work around racism, around the interrupting hate work that I'll be bringing to the Medford-Ashland area, and around restorative justice, creating systems for addressing harm that don't focus on punishment but focus on accountability and repair. So totally, like really creating new paradigms, I would say.
Marjorie Trueblood-Gamble, let's get your sense of the state of diversity at this moment.
I would say that there have always been these issues, and I would say that in November with the most recent election, I think that more people were awakened or, in the slang term, woke to the reality that a lot of marginalized populations are facing with some of the rhetoric that was being used in the media. Some interesting things that have happened on our campus is that while we know that all of these things are there, it wasn't, we haven't seen the reports that we have seen in the past years. And so it's been a little bit more quiet on campus, but in our community, we've seen a rise in those reports.
All right. We actually have some numbers we can talk about. We'll come back and talk more about those. Marjorie Trueblood-Gamble is the Director of Diversity and Inclusion at Southern Oregon University. Rabbi Deborah Kolodny teaches workshops on interrupting hate. She is the Executive Director of Resolutions Northwest. We'll come back and talk with both of them about social justice and equity in so many ways across the board in society today and what can be done to improve it. You can join the conversation. We'll provide phone number and email when we come back from this break with Rabbi Deborah and Marjorie Trueblood-Gamble. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We're talking about diversity and difference and diverting hatred, which is the work of our two guests this hour. Marjorie Trueblood-Gamble is the Director of Diversity and Inclusion at Southern Oregon University. Rabbi Deborah Kolodny is the Executive Director of Resolutions Northwest. She teaches workshops on interrupting hate, is bringing those to the Rogue Valley Monday and Tuesday of next week. Monday in Medford, Tuesday in Ashland. We'll have further details later in the hour. You can join the conversation right now about the things it takes to confront hatred and to work to promote the lack of hatred. Love, I guess, for lack of a better term in society. Join us at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So I want to, Marjorie, take a bit of a razor blade to what you were just talking about, just to sort of get a little finer detail on incidents of intolerance or bias that are showing up in Jackson County. You said not as much on campus, but what's the overall picture?
I would say that we have a community group called the Community Response Team that's largely facilitated by Unite Oregon in the area, and we've been encouraging people when they experience hate or bias to make reports so that we can know what's actually happening and provide support to the folks. And since July of 2016, we've seen over 155 reports come in that were of bias or a hate nature. Not all of those incidents were race-related. We've seen anti-Muslim sentiments. We've seen anti-Semitic sentiments. We've seen anti-immigrant sentiments, and so a wide range. And some of those things are happening in the community where people are using racial slurs with folks. In our schools, we're seeing a lot of race-based bullying or anti-immigrant bullying that's happening. Just last week, we received outreach from two schools outside of Jackson County that were wondering if we could provide some resources and support for dealing with some of the bullying that they're facing in their schools and their districts.
And what was the answer? Can you provide that kind of support?
What was the answer? we're doing what we can to try to help out the communities. And so I will be going to one school, and another one of my colleagues will be heading to the other.
What kind of support can you provide at a school level? What kinds of things can you, I mean, does it go directly to the students, or does it go more to administrators and teachers to get them trained for the kinds of things you want them to know?
All of the above. We've done some structural work with administrators and faculty in certain schools, and then we've also done presentations with some of the students there, whether it's working directly with the impacted students or the students that have made the offensive remarks.
Rabbi Deborah Kolodny, this is Southern Oregon we're talking about now. What are things like closer to you in a much larger and diverser area in greater Portland?
Yeah, I think that there's this myth or this fantasy that Portland and its environment is filled with progressive, friendly folk. And unfortunately, the number of incidents of hate crimes, I think the comparison is last January, a year ago January, there was something like 2 or 3 incidents reported. This January, there were something like 34 incidents reported in January alone, and that's only the official reporting through, you know, the city in terms of going to either the graffiti abatement office or to the police. So what we know is that an awful lot of incidents are taking place that are not reported through official channels, and what we also know is that the entire state of Oregon is first in the nation in hate incidents. And that spans the whole range from graffiti to verbal abuse to physical abuse, you know, grabbing off a woman's hijab or jostling somebody or, you know, screaming at somebody who appears to be Mexican that they need to leave, that they don't belong here. Recently, we had an incident, I think it was a week and a half ago, in an Iraqi-owned restaurant where an Iraqi vet unleashed some horrible violence, smashing a chair on a waiter and just screaming and yelling. And he's in custody now, but the owners of the restaurant continue to be fearful for ongoing harassment. So whatever the perception is of Portland and its environment, what has been unleashed in the last several months is affecting us just as much as any other part of the state.
First in the nation in hate incidents in raw numbers or per capita? I'm just wondering how bad this is compared to other states.
That's a great question. The article I'm referring to didn't make that distinction, but I think it's raw numbers.
All right. Just in general, does it feel, Rabbi Deborah, like there's a more or less constant set of fires, like there can be some sort of resolution or at least a momentary quiet on discrimination based on skin color, and then you get a flare-up of discrimination based on gender or sexuality?
I don't know that it's that linear. I think right now that there's an atmosphere of fear that has been generated that just causes people to lash out, and the targets are all of the above, you know, racial identity, sexual orientation, perceived national origin, gender. There's so much more harassment of women, violent abuse of language being directed at women. So I think it's all of the above. And it's one of the reasons why Resolutions Northwest was inspired to do training for folks if they see something happening in the street, if they see somebody harassing someone else, to learn how to be an active bystander as opposed to a passive bystander in ways that we have learned to be most effective, in ways that center the person who's being targeted and really focuses on bringing them to safety and doesn't focus on engaging the perpetrator or the person who's spewing hate, which could escalate.
Let's talk about some basic steps here, and I want to make sure we are cautious in letting people know what you hear here does not represent actual training, but
right.
I just want to hear from you, Rabbi Deborah, about what some of the basic steps are when you see somebody yelling at somebody else for reasons having to do with their ethnicity or something, and what the steps are.
Yeah, I mean, as you hear in many settings, safety first, and so the best way to be safe is to gather others around who are seeing the situation as you're seeing it, and so that you're not going in alone. You could just say something like, "This is not right. Does anyone agree with me?" And once people identify themselves as seeing that what's happening is not okay, as I said, really centering the needs of the person who's targeted. So approaching them and saying, would you like to walk with me to the next bus stop so that you don't have to deal with this? Or to, you know, move from this MAX car to another. MAX is our one of our public transportation systems. Or just, you know, whatever it takes to support the person targeted in leaving. I think most people freeze. That, you know, studies show there's been incredible research done, not just on street incidents where there's extreme violence, like gunshots, where people think, oh, someone else is going to take care of this. There's so many people here. So they just stop and freeze. Or they're terrified. They don't know if they're going to do the right thing, if they're going to make it worse. Or maybe what's happening isn't so bad. Maybe I'm misperceiving it. Maybe if I step in, I'm going to just, you know, be a fool. So the first thing we do is really awaken people to the things that restrain them from helping, and then give them resources around the best strategies for intervening. And of course, we also say there's no guarantees about whether or not things will escalate. We can only teach you the strategies that we know are the least likely to escalate, the most likely to be safe and create a positive outcome.
It sounds like the focus, though, is very much on the person who is receiving the abuse, that you're mm-hmm. really not engaging with the person who's delivering it.
That's right. That's right. Because the goal is just to create safety and connection and end whatever is happening, you know, reach closure with whatever is happening. And the likelihood is that if you try to engage the person who's perpetrating, you'll just aggravate and perhaps escalate.
Marjorie Trueblood Gamble, are there academic programs that are somewhat parallel to what we're talking about here on SOU's campus, or programs that help people on campus get training like this?
There are some similar programs or trainings. I know through the Oregon Student Association, they have a training called Interrupting Oppressive Moments, and some of our students lead those workshops, and we try to extend those to some of the high schoolers in the area. Then again, we also have programs like gender, sexuality, and women's studies on our campus, Native American studies, sociology, a social justice minor. So multiple opportunities to interrogate power, privilege, and oppression, and to think about how we can interrupt them interpersonally, but also structurally.
It sounds like we're doing a lot of the same work, which is wonderful to hear. I do want to mention that the Interrupting Hate in Public Spaces is just one of the workshops that we're doing. We have about 9 equity and anti-racism workshops, which also run the gamut from interpersonal interrupting microaggressions, addressing racist moments, to redesign of systems and structures. So
we're talking about interrupting hate in public spaces and the larger issue of diversity and difference in America and how to deal with people who don't particularly like the difference. We're talking to Rabbi Deborah Kolodny, who is the Executive Director of Resolutions Northwest, and talking to us from Portland. She'll be down in the Rogue Valley for Interrupting Hate in Public Spaces workshops next Monday and Tuesday. Marjorie Trueblood Gamble is the Director of Diversity and Inclusion at the Southern Oregon University campus. You can join our conversation on the exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. You talked about, Marjorie, interrupting personally and structurally. Give us an example of each of those, if you would.
Well, I think that a lot of times when we're talking about hate or racism or sexism or heterosexism, we're looking for what we know to be true about oppression, which is expecting an individual to make an offensive remark and being able to condemn that one person for doing that. But the history of our country is embedded with oppressive practices. And so that history of our country has been transmitted into our institutions that lead to disparities that actually happen structurally and institutionally. And so you can look at the outcomes of, like, who we are hiring, how are we retaining people from marginalized backgrounds, whether that's people of color, women, people from different sexual orientations, or people who have who identify outside of the gender binary. I know that in North Carolina, they've had a lot of back and forth of what they're going to do with those who identify as transgender. So really,
the so-called bathroom bill. Yeah.
The bathroom bill, right? And so really thinking about not just waiting for the offensive remark or slur to happen, but think about what are our institutions doing to perpetuate these injustices or inequities and disparities across the board. And so thinking about our hiring practices, thinking about what type of culture we're facilitating, how do we balance, which is always tricky, how are we like contemplating free speech and hostile environments? All of those things come into play.
So not to just assume that we're all open-minded and open-hearted here, but if you're doing things the way you've always done them, that you will get different results.
Right, most definitely, because we've been conditioned in our country to have certain biases against difference, people with differences. And whether we're conscious of those things or not, we can perpetuate those things that can still lead to the inequities. As Rabbi Kolotny talked about, we really do need to focus on equity in today's society and think about what are the outcomes for different communities.
Is there an assumption on college campuses like at SOU that you're going to have a lot of open-minded and bright people who are very open-hearted and that sort of thing, and that, there won't be any problem?
I think that there's that assumption, but I think that it's also a reality, and that even the most open-minded, open-hearted folks can still carry with them implicit biases that perpetuate inequities, which is hard,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
It doesn't make people bad people, but there are things that we can do to act against it, to work against it.
So, Rabbi Deborah, let's talk about implicit biases and how to identify them in ourselves and how to work them out into the open and deal with them.
Yeah, first of all, I'm just loving listening to what's going on with you, Marjorie, because our work is just so aligned. There's a wonderful test that you can take called the Harvard Implicit Bias Test, and there's a racial bias test, there's a disability/ableism bias test, there's several tests, there's a gender bias test, and what's a really good way to understand our implicit bias is to just go online, take this test, and see. No matter how woke we think we are, mm-hmm. whether we are a member of a targeted population, if we're black or brown or Jewish or queer, whatever, all of us carry these implicit biases because we have been acculturated in this world, which has all these biases. So the best we can do is wake up to that, pay attention to that, become aware of, are you subtly, diminishing the thoughts of someone because of their national origin, race, sex, whatever it is, any category? Are you attributing intention to someone that doesn't exist because of any of those categories? Are you assuming that somebody is not going to perform as well as someone else because of any of those categories? We all live with this, and I just want to say, here in the state of Oregon, which began as an apartheid state, which had in its constitution racial discrimination and oppression, the legacy is far more problematic even than I think many of us think the legacy is in the South with slavery, because there's just this perception that Oregon is progressive amongst folks who are here. And we continue to live with a really horrible legacy. And so to me, we can talk about individual awarenesses and reframing our thoughts so that we are more generous and open-minded and creating structures and systems that are going to ensure the hiring and the retention and the promotion of staff, and that ensure that the services that we provide are really not only honoring difference but also celebrating difference. We could do all that work. And then, to me, the bottom line is, when are we going to get to reparations? What kind of reparations are we going to give? How are we going to repair the harm of the history of this country against especially people, black people, people who are of African descent?
Well, and as you point out, Oregon has a bit of a stain on its very creation, because when it became a state, its way of dealing with not wanting to deal with a free or slave question was just not to allow any African Americans to live in the state, so excluded, period, from from day one, which brings up an issue of and you mentioned, Rabbi Deborah, about perceptions of the South versus what goes on in the North. You are from New York City yourself. I'm from not far away on Long Island. And I just wonder, and I'll get Marjorie in here as well, because she's also from a northern city, about whether you find racism just as bad in northern places as has often been attributed to the South.
I have to tell you my experience. I've lived in New York and in Philadelphia and in D.C., so in that 95 Northeast corridor, and I've lived here. Those are the four places I've lived in my life. And I have to say that in that entire Northeast corridor, my reality was nothing like it is in Oregon. First of all, just by sheer numbers, the school I went to was 50% people of color, primarily black folks. And I lived in a totally different world. My father was a jazz musician. I lived in a multiracial world, which was mutually respectful and creative and beautiful. And I just my entire experience was so totally different. Of course, racism exists. As I said, we are all subject to racial bias, and our systems and structures are all founded in this white supremacist kind of founding of our nation. But, I think it's totally different.
All right. We'll reserve Marjorie's answer for the other side of a break. We'll take that now. Back on the Jefferson Exchange to talk more about diversity and inclusion and ways to divert or at least disarm the people who would wield hate against other people. When we come back and talk more with Marjorie Trueblood Gamble from Southern Oregon University and Rabbi Deborah Kolodny from Resolutions Northwest. Back on the Jefferson Exchange with them and with your phone calls and emails in a minute 20. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We're talking about some fairly heavy matters today, which is diversity and bias and out-and-out hatred in society in America today, and how people who want more diverse societies can help diffuse situations. Interrupting Hate in Public Spaces is a set of workshops that will be offered in Medford on Monday and Ashland on Tuesday by Rabbi Deborah Kolodny from Portland, who is the Executive Director of Resolutions Northwest. We also brought into the discussion Marjorie Trueblood Gamble, who is the Director of Diversity and Inclusion at Southern Oregon University. And this is a conversation you're welcome to join at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. I want to complete a thought here. We're doing some comparisons with North and South. I've lived in both from the North originally, and it seems like racism is at least as strong there. I lived in New England when busing was going on in Boston, and there were riots in the streets over that caused by white people. And I would just wonder, Marjorie Trueblood Gamble, coming from a northern city yourself, from near Chicago, if you think racism is any different North and South.
I think that racism is racism, but I definitely think that there are some nuances to it. And I think that we like to point out the history of the South and thinking that that's what racism looks like. When I was in school, I took a class on the Civil Rights Movement, and we focused a lot about the Southern Civil Rights Movement. But there was also a Northern Civil Rights Movement that occurred that looked at not only what was happening in terms of voting rights, but what were redlining practices doing to marginalized folks who had migrated from the South to the North, right? So they made these moves, but they weren't allowed to buy houses in certain areas. They weren't given access to certain jobs. I'm originally from Gary, Indiana, and there was a great migration of black or African-American people to that area to work in the steel mills, which led to a lot of white flight in the city. A lot of the white people who had been residents there moved out and established themselves in the suburbs and the peripheral of that area and took their businesses. There was a black mayor, and a lot of institutions decided that they didn't want to do business with Gary anymore. It led to a lot of poverty and crime. And so I've seen both the overt acts of interpersonal racism, but also what happens when policies shift and the institutional and structural barriers that also come from that form of oppression. I would say it's just as insidious. But even though that was there, it is very, very different here in Oregon. And I think it is about the numbers. I think that people in other areas might be a little bit more direct with their language when they're talking about these issues. And I think that sometimes we want to – there's a term called white fragility, but I think that there's a lot of people in Oregon that would rather deal with things indirectly.
Mm-hmm. You mean they're being very polite and not just getting right to the nub of the matter?
Right. Or a big thing that I've seen or witnessed here is that there's a – we like to minimize the incidents that do occur because we don't want to believe that something like that would happen in our community or here. For example, the incidents that took place over the summer last year, there were a few incidents in which African-American women were verbally assaulted and threatened. And it was conflated as one racist person who was mentally disturbed that was doing this. And so we don't really have a race issue or a racism issue in our part of the state. And we can just shrug it off. Well, now that we are intentionally collecting the reports of hate and bias in this area, we can say that these aren't incidents in isolation. These things are affecting our community and our climate, and that our marginalized populations are impacted negatively, especially our schools. It's been overwhelming in some ways and emotional in some ways to know that little people in elementary school are dealing with bullying or having their peers tell them that when they go home that their parents will be deported or being assaulted with the N-word on a continual basis.
Do white people often want to do the whole, oh, it couldn't happen here, our community is too nice for that?
I would say so. Yes, I think that I think that having conversations about race, racism, and oppression are uncomfortable. And we live in a beautiful place, and we don't have some of the violent ills that other places do, but that doesn't necessarily mean that we don't suffer from racism and other forms of oppression.
Rabbi Deborah, I heard a hum of agreement from you a minute ago.
Oh, I agree with everything Marjorie said from the beginning of the program. The only thing that I would add is I think that not only is there a belief around niceness, but there's also a culture of passive aggression. I would not say of politeness. I think it's much more problematic than that. So somebody might say one thing to your face and really believe and think and talk about you behind your back in ways that are fundamentally aggressive. So, and that's not, I never experienced that. Not that passive aggressiveness doesn't exist in the rest of the world, but I've never experienced anything like that on the East Coast. I think people are more direct. And I also want to say I certainly echo Marjorie's comments about all the systemic and structural racism throughout the country, including the Northeast. I think because of the difference in demographics, much, much larger numbers, it's just a different environment.
Let's take a call here. We have Daniel and Grants Pass on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Marjorie Trueblood Gamble and Rabbi Deborah Kolodny.
Hi, Jeff and Marjorie. Guys, I wanted to piece in another part. There's a woman I really admire, Carol Gilligan, New York University, a psychologist who brought up for me anyway a little while ago about the presence of patriarchy as a ruling, but kind of like an unacknowledged basis that we make our decisions from. And patriarchy needs enemies. It needs separation. It needs to, it really, and absolutely needs to be unchallenged. But the difficulty of managing something which is like cultural wide, but just not paid attention to, fortunately, what psychologists, good ones too, they say you got to examine, guys, exactly the root motives that you're using in making policies and making your decisions and keeping institutional inequities going. What I love about her is that she brings up the feminine ethic, the ethic of care. First, do no harm. Don't look at policy simply as an equity or equal distribution of justice, but look at who's going to be harmed. And if there is harm, which is involved in any of our policies, especially in any of our public statements, it's huge, but I think it's really an overarching, we're all living in it and we're not paying attention to it.
All right. Thanks for that, Daniel. Appreciate that. Rabbi Deborah, you want to jump in there?
I just wanted to say That's a very astute observation, and one of the tools of analysis that we use in our equity work is to always ask the question of every policy, every action, who is benefited and who is burdened, and what is the nature of those benefits and those burdens, you know, and what repair has to be done and what reorganization needs to be done as a result of that. So we imagine, we have this fantasy that we live in a meritocracy. That's another thing I think that white people like to use to justify whatever exists in the world. And the truth is that our systems and structures are racist and oppressive because they were designed to be that way. And we need to actually break it down. And asking the question, who's burdened, who's harmed, and how can we care for them? Not in a patronizing or paternalistic way, but in a liberating way, in a way that really lifts up everybody's highest potential, is the work.
Marjorie Trueblood Gamble, I find myself thinking about institutional things that continue systems that have been producing inequity through the years. And I wonder if, as the director of diversity and inclusion at Southern Oregon University, you occasionally turn your gaze back upon the institution itself.
Oh, most definitely. I mean, that's a part of the work. It's not only providing support and training, but also looking at the policies and procedures that we have in effect and thinking about what harm they might be doing to certain communities unintentionally. So I sit on the policy committee for Southern Oregon University. We've worked on establishing more inclusive procedures for our search committees, thinking about how we can address like climate issues through our bias response team. It's all of those things. And it's not just doing the community work, which is extremely important, but also doing the campus community work. And I'm very fortunate that I get to do that here.
That's great. You get to turn in both directions. Specifically to things that happen within campus events, you know, where somebody has said something they shouldn't have said or done something they shouldn't have done, just committed some kind of aggression on another person. I imagine you had a fair number of conversations with students that have started with, what did I do? And I wonder what the answer often is.
Sometimes it's just letting them talk about what their experiences were in that situation and hearing them out, and then letting them know, if I'm advocating on behalf of someone else, to let them know what the impact of that was. And I think a lot of times when it comes to bias, maybe not hate so much, is that people want to lead with what their intentions were. So if they're called on missteps, well, I never intended to do that, or it was just a joke. It's really turning the gaze from their intention to realizing the impact of what their actions have done. And in those conversations, the majority of the time, people are responsive and will think about what they've done and think about how they can curb their behavior for the future. In other situations, people don't see anything wrong with their ideologies and would like to hold true to those opinions and those sentiments. And having those conversations, at least we've done our part to make them aware of what the impact was. But it takes a lot to try to change someone's heart and mind. And hopefully we can plant seeds that might not necessarily be realized in that moment.
All right. So you might not see the benefit right away, but you're hoping down the road, maybe. Mm-hmm. All right. Another call here from Kathy in Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Marjorie Trueblood Gamble and Rabbi Deborah Kolodny.
Hi. Wonderful show. Thanks so much for doing this. I wanted to say that in my lifetime, I've seen the transformation of attitudes towards other races go so much healthier direction, and it's been wonderful to see. I'm originally from Northern California, and I think that in the present discussion, there really needs to be more said about the fact that so many people who are not people, white as white people, or are more lean well towards other races and really don't want to be racist themselves. And this idea that, you know, there is some element of racism in all of us that needs to be ferreted out is almost a problem in itself. I think there's a danger that we can go overboard with this and almost aggravate the whole scene and make it seem normal to be racist. Mm. I don't know if this is making any sense. I had a friend that was black, and she said, you know, I know that all these white people are behind our backs saying racist things to each other. And just the opposite is true. There is so much well-meaning towards other races that I pointed that out to her, and she had a difficult time accepting that. And I'm concerned about that.
All right. Thanks for the call, Kathy. Appreciate that. So, Marjorie, how do you inform people who think, okay, I'm not a racist. I'm the least racist person you'll ever meet, for example, I've heard said. And then where do you go from there?
I think that we, like, interrogate microaggressions and go to that, focus on the impact that is being had, right? And I think that it's also, like, broadening how we conceptualize racism to being beyond those overt displays of slurs and name-calling and white hoods and Nazi symbols. I think that when people are letting you know that they've been impacted by their behavior, there are a number of responses that we can have to that. And it's not just white people. We've all been conditioned in the society to perpetuate oppression. But it's being open and trying to learn and figuring out how we cannot engage in that misstep again. And so if people have good intentions, I try not to lead with, me personally, I try not to lead with, oh, you're engaging in oppression right now, but to really, like, focus on what the actions were and how it impacted someone. I do know that there are a lot of people of all hues and backgrounds and sexual orientations and faiths that really want to make positive change. And I've seen that happen in our valley. I've seen that happen with the multiple conversations on race where hundreds of people have showed up. And even though we show up for these conversations, it's a first step and it's a journey. We're on a journey to make things better.
All right. We will see how well we do on that journey as we go down the road. Interrupting hate in public spaces is what Rabbi Deborah Kolodny is coming to the Rogue Valley to talk about with Resolutions Northwest, where she's the executive director. She'll be doing a partnership with the Resolve Center for Dispute Resolution and Restorative Justice in Medford. So that'll be Monday evening in Medford at the library or Tuesday evening at the Stevenson Union at Southern Oregon University. And I want to thank you, Rabbi Deborah, for joining us today in the exchange.
Thank you so much. It was great to be here. I look forward to meeting you, Marjorie.
Marjorie Trueblood-Gamble is the Director of Diversity and Inclusion at Southern Oregon University. Always good to see you. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.